I started making music and drawing at the same time when I was like 5. By the time I was in my final year, I did a project, and from that project, I got slotted into an internship at Jaguar Land Rover. And from there, my automotive career began properly.
How do you juggle all these things at once?
The word I've been hearing recently being used, and I feel like it simplifies things a bit for me, is polymath. And the way I translate it is, I'm doing all these things, but I'm also doing them to the best of my abilities and executing them on a high level.
Hello guys, welcome to another episode of How Things Work. On today's episode, we're talking to Nisi Ogulu. She is a music artist, an animator, and the CEO of Kemet Automotives, an EV company in Africa. On this episode, she tells us how she juggles being a creative and CEO of an electric company at the same time. Okay. All right. So, Nisi, you're into a couple of things that some are related, some are quite unrelated. So, automobile, music, painting, animation. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. Those other three are kind of related. But then automobile is like worlds apart from that. How exactly did you, or should I start with, how do you juggle all these things at once?
I have been doing them all for quite some time now, to be honest. So, I mean, in school, it was always physics, maths, science, and subjects that relate to engineering that I gravitated towards. And beside that, I was also very proficient with art and music, and it was just my love, essentially, for those things. So I've always done them. So it doesn't feel strange at all to me. It feels like a normal course of action. I understand that people might find it to be, a bit of an unorthodox combination, but to me, it's just been my life.
That's really interesting. It's really interesting. How would you describe yourself, like, based on everything you combine that you do together?
The word I've been hearing recently being used, and I feel like it simplifies things a bit for me, is polymath. And the way I translate it is, I'm doing all these things, but I'm also doing them to the best of my abilities and executing them on a high level, because each and every one of them is extremely important to me. They are the essence of my being. So I will not allow myself to not give it everything that I can. So I think the best description I've heard so far has been a polymath.
Okay. So, I mean, I know you started for music, you started at a very young age. Mm-hmm. You know, for the automobile side, I think that's where the maths and physics and all those.
Yeah, exactly.
When it comes to like deciding what exactly, okay, this is what I want to do with my life, right? Which one came first?
That's a good question, you know. Which one actually came first? I don't know that anyone was ahead of another, because it was almost happening quite simultaneously. I mean, I started making music and drawing at the same time when I was like 5. And I was already in school, but I guess you cannot say somebody has the like science bug until a little bit later. When we were 5 and 6, what were we really reading in school? But I was always a creative and curious child in terms of wanting to understand how things worked, how devices were working. I always loved cars, and I think I got that from my dad. But if we're talking about from a professional standpoint, because engineering had to have my education prepare me for it in a professional capacity, I guess you can say music and art came first professionally, because I started to do those things from a very, very, very young age.
Okay, that's really interesting. And it's really interesting because I would say for most people, I'm not completely sure, but for most people, when it comes to like things like that, you know that the nerdy people usually gravitate towards maths, physics, and things like that.
Yeah.
The more bold kind of people, more outgoing kind of people, more extroverted kind of people go for things like music, film, you know, art,
yeah,
and things like that.
So
what kind of kid were you? Are you like, it's kind of like you're a combination of...
I'm the classic definition of never let them know your next move. No, I was a bit of everything. I am still a bit of everything. I think I'm a very unboxed person. I am very open-minded, and there's so many things I want to try and so many things that I am. I don't really have any confinements beyond like my values, but I can be extroverted. I can be very introverted as well. I can take over a room as an MC, or I can just be the person that sits in the corner and is quiet. I'm very observant as well. So it depends on the day you catch me and the occasion that I'm there at. But ultimately, I think as a child, I was just very explorative. I wanted to try things. And then I knew what I liked and what I didn't like. And I really stuck to all the things that I liked and tried to engage myself in them as much as possible.
That's very interesting. And I guess, you use the word unboxed. I think, did that inspire
you? Pun intended.
That's nice. Nice one. All right. So now let's go to the meat of the conversation. So, your career in automobiles, how did it start?
Okay, so to be honest, when it came to cars, my main love for it was in driving them, right? And in just having that typical, you know, which cars do you look at and you're like, oh, wow, I want this. And with my dad, like I said, who was a very big car aficionado, I learned to drive the youngest in my family. So it just felt like something that was for me. While I was wanting to go to university, I was actually contemplating between doing aeronautic engineering and mechanical engineering. But I had a conversation and it was just clear to me that mechanical engineering would give me more options in terms of where I could go in life, because I have so many interests, right? I'm very interested in business. I'm very interested in devices, technology, in all different kinds of capacities and spaces, as well as politics and economics. So mechanical engineering gives you room to be able to stretch yourself to any industry, whether it's finance, business, politics, whatever the case may be. So that's why I did that. But while I was in uni, my university had an automotive engineering department that was backed by the British government. So it was a very big thing there. And I started off just drawing and sketching cars or motorbikes as part of my mechanical design course. And I realized it was something that I could do well and I was very interested in aside from the fact that I had this love for cars and motorbikes and all that. So it was just a natural progression of things. I guess life sort of molded itself to align in that capacity, because by the time I was in my final year, I did a project, and from that project, I got slotted into an internship at Jaguar Land Rover. And from there, my automotive career began properly. So I guess I can say that's where it was. And of course, I mean, I love Formula One. So there's always been that angle of things, and wanting to build a car has always been in my mind. I wanted to build a car and a plane. I haven't gotten to a plane yet, but we'll see. We'll see maybe one day. But yeah, that's sort of my story there.
Wow, that's really interesting. I mean, you makes you know, being able to do all these things sound very easy, but you know, I'm trying to wrap my head around, you know, doing all these things at the same time, right? So you said the love started with driving. What kind of car did you start with?
The first car I drove was, funny enough, I think it was a Passat.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was a blue VW Passat.
Okay.
That was my dad's car, a manual one. So please, everybody that starts driving with automatic, you people are living soft life. But it was a manual one. And after that, I drove that, and then my dad moved me to a Peugeot. I think he was trying to train me to be able to handle rugged cars first before I got my first automatic.
Interesting. So what kind of car do you drive now, or do you have like a dream car?
I have dream cars for sure. I mean, my ultimate dream car is my Kemet.
Nice.
The exclusive vehicle that we have in our pipeline. That's my dream car. But car I drive now, to be honest, it depends on where I am. So because my base is London, I guess I drive a bit more there. And I decided to go electric. So I went with the Taycan.
Okay. So that's what
a Taycan.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Do you know what a Taycan is?
No, it's my first time here.
Okay, so it's the electric Porsche.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Everyone is going electric now.
Well, I have to walk the walk. I can't just talk the talk.
Yeah. Really interesting stuff. All right. So let's talk a little bit about your time at Land Rover and Jaguar.
Yeah.
You're a lead designer. What does that entail? How do you describe that kind of job description?
I mean, so lead product engineer, but I didn't start off as that. I really started doing the grunt work as anybody that would newly come into a business. And then I worked my way up. I think I was very fortunate in that I moved through a lot of departments. And I think because of that movement, I was escalating up ranks quicker than if I had stayed in the same department. So I did everything from working on first building the cup holders to working with customer innovation, where we're designing new products that we can implement into the car, then going to work on a special vehicle project for like the Red Cross in a completely different department and doing that for a year. To going to work on the first EV that they had, the I-Pace in Austria, did that for another year before. And all that sort of introduced me to people who saw my capabilities on managerial levels before I was appointed as into a lead project role for the Range Rover. And, you know, it felt like being thrown in the deep end, but I think I was always somebody that embraced challenges. So I found it to be very insightful. I learned a lot from my experience there, to be honest, understanding how the entire scope and pipeline works from design phase to suppliers, negotiations, manufacturing, monitoring the manufacturing processes, dealing with different people from in the business internally and externally as well. So it really, really prepared me to take on a full role as, you know, a CEO or as a founder of a company, because I got to see the different facets of what it took to make a full car, which if you stay in one department, you won't really get to see. And I did that I took that role on for 3 years in COVID, which had its own extra challenges too. And you learn how to deal with people. You learn how to deal with leadership. You learn how to deal with people that work with you. And it just teaches you how to become a more well-rounded businesswoman.
Well, very interesting. All right. So before I go to my next question, I have a follow up, a bit controversial. So you can skip it if you want. I don't know if you saw the recent Jaguar rebrand and
Yes, I did.
But for someone that used to work there, what did you make of it?
So to be honest, we knew even before I left, we knew that they were going to do a complete shift into creating an all-electric Jaguar, right? Jaguar will now only be making electric vehicles. But I hadn't seen design until we all saw it. I understand people's disdain because Jaguar is associated with a certain level of... there's a certain classic element to a Jaguar design that is essentially what everybody who is a Jaguar lover gravitates towards, right? You've created a product where everybody has seen it as this, and you're now completely doing a 180 into something that is for a completely different market, that is even a market that is unidentified. You don't know who they are. So it's a big shock. For instance, right, Tesla released the Cybertruck. It didn't get as much outrage as this because people expected something like that from the company. You don't see a classic Jaguar, an XE or an XJ or an F-Type, and then all of a sudden you now see this one, right? It's a bit of a confusing one. However, I will give them kudos for the boldness of the change. They saw that part of the brand needed to pivot. And the way in which they're doing it is on the complete end of the spectrum. It's like go big or go home. And the way they're marketing it and trying to build a community around the vehicle, I think is very interesting. I'm very curious to see how it unfolds. From a design perspective, I haven't been inside the car, so I don't know. But externally, I think the colors are a bit outlandish for me. But if we had those colors in more neutral tones, I think the car can work. It's all about how you position yourself in the market and how you market it. So I'm with everybody who is a bit outraged by the switch up, but I will give them the boldness.
Yeah, it was quite a bold move. Speaking of bold moves, when did you decide that you wanted to launch your own automobile company? When it comes to anything hardware related in Nigeria, I've been reporting on tech in Nigeria for some time now, I think almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. And one thing I can always say for a fact that you have to be very courageous to decide on your own that you want to go into hardware, right? Because it's a really hard, very tough place to... You rarely even see investors, look at places like that. So when did you just decide to make that more bold move that, I want to do this?
To be fair, I think my entire life has been tailored by myself, of course, towards how I can elevate the African continent, because it's important that we have our own manufacturing sectors. It's important for our economy. It's important for our standing on the global scale. It's important for us to start to cut back a lot on our dependence and reliance on imports. So I always knew that whatever field I was in, I would have to bring it back to the continent. Now, the decision did not really come to me until 2020. I think COVID was a bit of a catalyst with that, where I realized... everybody in some way started to evaluate their purpose, right? I started to really understand what was important to them and what wasn't, because like you all, we all felt very mortal, right? We all knew that our time on this earth is very limited. Anything can happen. So I think it was at that point that I decided that I needed to start making plans to actualizing this idea and dream of mine. But I wanted to do it in a way that made sense. So I wanted to make sure that I completed the project I was working on. And coincidentally, as soon as I completed the project and I resigned, I received numerous messages. And one was from my now business partner who had been messaging me for months and I didn't see it. And just going through his message and his proposal, it was almost like looking or talking to myself. So it was an instant connection. There was already somebody in place who was aligned with my vision and who had started to also try to actualize it. So everything just fell into place at that point in time, and that was 2021. So I think in my head, the decision was made in 2020, but it was materialized in 2021.
Interesting. So why EVs? And I know every EV seems to be like the next phase when it comes to automobile, right? But you know, aside from the fact that everyone thinks that, what is your own reason for choosing electric vehicles and not just, you know, regular ICE?
Yeah. So it's clear to all of us that we have a problem on the axis of climate and also when it comes to resources, scarcity of resources. And that scarcity of resources is what's causing a lot of hikes in oil prices, etc. And it's very clear to us as well that there are mandates in place that need to be actualized so that we can cut down on CO2 emissions. It's not an optional thing. It's going to happen. So we all need to start to align. So when you want to start a company for vehicles, and you are the kind of person like we are, who think progressively, who want to champion sustainability and ensure that our ecosystems are also improving with our products. And that's where being climate friendly, creating a product that can enhance people's interaction with their resources and how we experience life from a longevity perspective. You want to take the approach that suits that best. And electric vehicles do. I know there are many options. There's CNG, there's hydrogen. All these things are still in testing phase and have a lot of safety factor risks. And you have to look at the ecosystem that you want to deploy in. We're talking about Africa here. So we need adoption systems that can make sense in the terrain. You're developing an entire new infrastructure around the product. So you want to create one that is long lasting. With electric vehicles, you're not trying to cut corners by saying, okay, you know what, let me do ICE now and then hybrid later. Because at that point, everybody would have already surpassed you in the market. You will now be trying to play catch up. So for us, it was very, very important to ensure that we were leading the charge in sustainability, because it's extremely important for us to better our climate. Africa, to be honest, according to data, is the only continent that can actually achieve net zero if we apply ourselves, and that's a big if. But I think that we all need to be very bold about making a conscious decision to do that and take us away from our reliance on oil and fossil fuels. So with Kemet, it introduces a product that is created and designed for the African terrain. It's created for the world that we live in. It's created for a future that can be long-lasting with electric vehicles. We will continue to do research and continue to do R&D to develop our technology, as well as power sources, because at the end of the day, we're always going to evolve, right, when it comes to renewable energy power sources. but electric vehicles are the cleanest, safest, and most progressive option that there is right now.
Okay. So how has it been doing everything you do plus Kemet?
It's a juggle, and it's difficult, to be honest. I think a lot of it is down to teams and planning. A lot of it is scheduling and just keeping your mental state a bit solid, because if you're not in a solid state, then everything else starts to crumble. And I think for me, that's the biggest challenge, just making sure that I see every challenge or difficulty as something that I can attack, or something that I can deal with. And that's a very mental thing. I guess it's in how you say, when I talk about these things, there's an ease to it, because in my mind, I have to be that way. If I feel like I'm being bombarded with so many things and it's overwhelming, I won't be able to survive. I'll literally be sinking, right? So I am very blessed to have teams that can execute, and hopefully we will continue to expand and that burden will become lighter because it will be better shared. But I am also someone who doesn't see difficulties or challenges as red tape or stops. I see them as just hurdles that I need to jump over. And no matter how big they are, I don't see anything as impossible.
That's, I think I'm going to borrow some of that. Just, yeah.
Feel free.
I'm juggling things and I feel like, why not just face one? But listening to how you do it, right, and doing them well. I'm definitely burned.
It's a bit of a nuanced thing, because we also have to be very honest with ourselves, right? I have innate accountability. I really, really do hold myself accountable to my actions. And that is where a lot of people miss it. As far as I have seen, it's that you can do things. You can do many things at the same time. However, if one thing is killing the other, then you're not really doing many things at the same time successfully. And I think a lot of us are not accountable. We're not accountable to ourselves to really say, you know what? Sometimes doing the one thing and being the best at that one thing is what is for me. Or doing many things is something that I can handle, and that's for me too. So there is no right or wrong way, in my opinion. I think you just have to know yourself and understand what it is that you want to do and really hold yourself accountable.
All right. Awesome. All right, now let's go into learning about EVs. Right. It's not new.
It sounded like a class now.
Yes. it's not new, but I still think there's a lot about it that a lot of people do not understand, especially in Nigeria, Africa.
Yeah.
And in fact, globally, because I also read, you know, some ways things they do globally when people talk about why would you decide not to buy an EV? And they're still giving a lot of, it's just that there's people globally still do not understand enough about EVs.
Right? Yeah.
So in simple terms, how do EVs work?
So, electric vehicles are essentially battery-powered cars that run on electricity, typically. So it's almost like you have your phone, you charge it, it has a battery in it, and that's how it functions, as opposed to using your internal combustion, you know, your fuel lights a spark that ignites the engine and it starts to turn, right? So you're using electricity as a power source. That is it in a nutshell. If we get into the intricacies of the different kinds of batteries and the different kinds of software that must align, whether you're doing a skateboard or you're doing single cell, about resources. That's a whole different class. But I think for all people, it's just to understand that it's a device that runs on electricity.
Okay.
Basically, as all opposed right. to fuel and heat and fire.
Okay. So what are those misconceptions you've seen a lot of people have about electric vehicles?
I would say, as opposed to a misconception, I think the biggest fear when it comes to EVs for people is that, oh, my car will just stop on the road.
Range anxiety, right?
And I won't be able to do anything about it. I'll be stuck. And I mean, when you think about it, it's a valid concern. But where we are right now in terms of the technology, it's very unlikely when you have an infrastructure that has been built to accommodate the cars. You can get as much as 800 kilometers worth of range in a car. A lot of us don't use that in a day unless you are constantly cross-country commuting. And a lot of people can own their own chargers in their houses. There's a lot of technology now that accommodates supercharging. So all you need to do is plug your car in for 30 minutes. You've gone from 0 to 100, right? So I think the technology is evolving at a pace that will start to quell a lot of those fears. And people just need to be aware about what their options are. Another thing is in Africa, I guess, especially Nigeria or countries that don't have regular power supply, there's also a concern on how they charge the cars. But it will be a similar system to how you fuel your car. It will just be created to accommodate a little bit of a longer wait time if you don't have a charging system at home. And then for companies like Kemet, we create a lot of cushions where we will have supporting charging systems that are portable, etc., for emergency. So everybody is really thinking these fears through to make sure we de-risk it as much as possible. So I think a lot of people just need to be educated on how it works, how easy it is to do the transactions, your range, the cost save, specifically. People need to be aware of that and just understanding how to plug to your mains, I guess.
Yeah. Another misconception I've seen that I've seen a lot of, and, you know, when I try to, because I've done a couple of stories on EVs, I've had to do some research, and, you know, I try to tell people, I mean, there was recently a post on Twitter about EVs and things like that, and I saw a lot of people saying things like, oh, it's Nigerian bad roads, and, you know, EVs will need a lot of maintenance, we don't have mechanics.
Right.
And I was like, they don't have engines, so maintenance won't really be that much of an, but you know how
well,
people
okay
like
so you know
so
what
maybe if you tell them they'll believe this time.
So you know what I like that you've logically assessed it. Electric vehicles have way less components than internal combustion, so your maintenance is going to be way less as well. You're not going to have to do a lot of these things. And bad roads or non-bad roads, these are things that are being taken into account when you're building a car, naturally. So it's about who's building your chassis, your suspension system, how are they doing that to be robust? And then you purchase your car based on the ecosystem you live in. If you live in an area that is off-road, you're not going to buy yourself a skittish saloon car. You buy one with off-road capabilities, right?
Yeah.
So it's down to the choice. And I think the car manufacturer and what they're catering for. I can only speak for us in that we are catering for a lot of the African terrain and terrain that is similar. But people should stop being afraid about maintenance. I understand that, you know, because you don't see a lot of EV workshops, you're probably thinking, where will I go and service the car now? but it's so easy to do. And I think a lot of things that we've been discussing, even with the bodies that are currently in place for electric vehicles in Nigeria, is how we can continue to run training centers and get people up to speed with repairs and maintenance. But it will be a much, much more painless venture than an internal combustion engine car.
Okay. So another misconception is, I don't think it's a misconception. I think it's valid, right? Mm-hmm. And that's price. Although I hear some Chinese manufacturers, you know, I don't know how they do it, selling them at ridiculously low prices and things mm-hmm. like that. But even at that, because of the kind of, region we are, the kind of country we are, price is very sensitive,
It is, subject. It is.
So, for someone building an electric company, how do you think about price and, the kind of market you're trying to sell to?
What informs your pricing for production is down to the technology that you've managed to develop in-house and how you've acquired the materials you've used to develop it and you've cut costs based on that. So that is where the Chinese have the upper hand, in that their supply chain essentially and their cost of production is much lower. So they're able to sell at also lower prices, and that doesn't affect their profit margin much, right? But then when you think about other companies in other parts of the world, in the Western world, who don't have that kind of accessibility to cheap production costs, or even the technology development that can help them to offset costs, it then makes the cars more expensive. But even at that, even the EVs that are more expensive as a one-off cost, right, cost of purchase, in the long run, you will be spending less than you would if you bought an ICE car, because your cost of electricity predominantly is less right now than the cost of diesel or petrol in the market. So then your maintenance costs will obviously be lower as well. So if you think a year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, you're saving yourself a lot of money. But with us, these are all things you have to take into consideration, trying to minimize your production cost as much as possible so that you keep your base prices competitive with the Chinese, for instance. I think in the long run, I think people need to understand that no matter what car you buy that is an EV, check your specs, but it's highly unlikely that you purchase an EV that will cost you more in the long run than an ICE car.
Okay. So you said, the price you sell your EV is dependent on, the amount of things you're able to do in-house. For now in Nigeria, maybe we could even talk about the process of, building an EV and what is available in Nigeria.
Right.
And mm-hmm. the kind of prices people can expect, when it comes to, an actual electric vehicle. Because for now, the thing with EVs in Nigeria now is, it's the mini ones, like the three-wheelers and two-wheelers that are really mm-hmm, more mm-hmm. popular. But
yes.
When it comes to like buying something like a Toyota Camry, but it's an EV,
yeah. Right?
What kind of price can we expect based on what the production process looks like?
It's so interesting that you said the Toyota Camry, because that's what we actually use for benchmarking our prices.
Oh, okay.
So making sure that our base prices were, because the Toyota Camry is one of the most popular vehicles in a lot of African countries. So making sure that our base price was matching that. So those are the kind of prices you would be expecting for a full vehicle. Obviously, we'll have more micro-mobility options that can be lower for the mass market on the lower income bracket. So we're trying to make sure that we cater to everybody across all demographics. So we have products that match. It depends on what you're looking for as well. If you're wanting to be, if you're wanting to have a Land Cruiser version of an EV, I mean, essentially, you're going to be prepared to pay Land Cruiser prices, right? So, and if you want to just have a regular saloon car, we're making sure that our prices are competitive and affordable, ensuring that you're not going to be having a tough time transitioning between what the price of the cars that you own now are when you want to switch to an EV.
Okay. Do you see EVs becoming mainstream anytime? Okay. Do you see them becoming mainstream? And if yes, what kind of time frame do you think it will take?
Most definitely, I think they will become mainstream because we have to go that route. I don't think there's any governing body around climate change that will allow people to continue to operate with the kind of carbon emissions that internal combustion engines are creating. So every country has a mandate to hit net zero. So in order for them to do that, they have to implement EVs. So they will be a global phenomenon. Now, in terms of performance, because a lot of car lovers are sticklers for performance, and I'll be honest, right? I was one of them. When it comes to performance, EVs are now coming to a place where they can compete with internal combustion engines, but internal combustion engines offer the best performance if you're talking about your acceleration, your horsepower, your speed. Mm-hmm. But not a lot of people need that. Are we doing Need for Speed on the road? And at the end of the day, we're just commuting. So you have EVs right now that will take you 0 to 60 in 6 seconds, which is incredible.
Even a lot less, actually.
Even a lot less. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
So we need to start to think of things like that. Why not? Is the question we need to ask ourselves. How inconvenient is it really for you to transition between the two? Not much. The bulk of the work is on the infrastructural development, which is our job and the job of the government and companies who are creating these products to ensure that these things are put in place and people have options for their convenience. So I don't see a reason why EV shouldn't become mainstream in the near future.
So when you mentioned 0 to 60, I just thought of a question, and I think I've noticed that EVs are actually, and I'm sure they are a lot faster than IC, right? I've seen some pretty incredible things people have been able to do with EVs. Like, I think one I saw was the Rimac. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other ones like that.
You're not wrong. I mean, generally, EVs have faster acceleration than ICE vehicles, but that's because they can deliver maximum torque, and they can do that instantly. But when you have an ICE vehicle, you need to build up your engine speed so your torque reaches its peak, right? So from an acceleration point of view, 100%, they hit full torque instantly from standstill. And it's like you're moving like a ninja. You don't hear anything. but I guess there's some people who like the rev of the car, you know, the muscle of the car, which you can implement in your car using just sound tricks at the end of the day.
I recently saw MKBHD bash the sound trick. I think it was for a Dodge. They created that
electric
vehicle, and it kind of have like it had speakers at the back. And would you drive something like that that has speakers?
You know, it's an option in many EVs, right? As a package that you can buy.
Really? I feel it's a bit ridiculous.
You know the truth is people have the little things that they love.
Mm.
You know, when you get into your car, let's say you have, let's think about it this way, right? You buy yourself a new Lamborghini, okay, and you're rolling into town. You want people to feel your presence. I want people to not just see you, but hear you. When you turn on that ignition, your car makes the roar, and you're like, ah, somebody's here. So I guess for people who want that kind of experience, you just create an offering for them. It's the little pleasures that make life joyous, I guess. True. So, you know, let's not take it away from people. Life is plenty hard. Let's not help it.
So I think you've mentioned, you know, one of the things that will make sure that your EVs become mainstream in Africa. And I think one of those things are the charging infrastructure, which is very important, right? But I don't know why I'm a bit skeptical, right? Because I know those things are not cheap. And then when it comes to EV companies in Africa, in Nigeria, they are very young. They are still very small. We don't even have enough investors that are willing to, you know, back those kind of companies. How do you think this will work?
You are right to be skeptical, and I think it's one of the biggest roadblocks that we have faced, but are somewhat managing to surpass, because there are a lot of progressive governments and initiatives on the continent. If we're being honest, there are a lot of institutions that are very pro sustainability, pro climate change, and pro green mobility as well. So those are really the guys that come and back you, especially when you are prepared for it. It is going to be a lot of work. Let's not mince words. It's nowhere close to a walk in the park. But it's down to how much do we know our onions and how good is the strategy. Regardless, you will always meet new challenges that will come that you didn't expect. But if you're well prepared, I think you'll be fine. For us specifically, I will say from an investment perspective, yes, there are investors. There are a certain kind of investor that can invest in such large infrastructural projects, but they do exist. And they are very supportive because their causes and their visions are aligned. And then you think about, what was your other concern again, beyond the investment? Infrastructural development, right?
So everything requires investments.
It all does. Infrastructural development has to take place in a way that you work with the environment you're in. So how a company will operate in Kenya is different from how they operate in Nigeria. The power supply is completely different.
True.
I know that I have to create an off-grid electric solution in Nigeria that I might not necessarily need to do in another African country that has constant power. But those are the things that we factor in and make sure that we have unlock before we choose any location to start to market our products. Making sure that we have the right infrastructure, the right backing, the right power supply to accommodate our infrastructural development. All charging stations will be supplied with the right electricity and have renewable electricity as backup systems. So we are thinking about a lot of things to make sure that all these fears that people have are tackled.
Okay. All right. So what role will do you see Kemet playing when it comes to EV adoptions in Nigeria or Africa?
I think honestly we have to play a very pivotal role because we are going to be one of the pioneers of the movement, especially in the industrialization aspect of things, as opposed to just retail. We're very focused on industrialization. So we're going to be very pivotal. And I think that it takes an entire community, right? It's one player cannot have all the answers. So there's going to be a lot of collaboration with a lot of people who are acting in different capacities in the same space, coming together for a common goal. We are already making a lot of these collaborations and they will continue to grow, hopefully. I think we have a few actors that we can put and merge together to build your supply chain, for your infrastructural development, for your tech, for your software, for your batteries, raw materials, etc. There's a lot of key players that are involved. So I think Chemet plays a very centralized, pivotal role because it's almost as though you are the magnet that needs to pull everybody in to make sure the entire system works.
So what's your traction like now?
Ooh, I need to NDA you before I can tell you my traction. I'll give you top lines. I think now we're very much in a space where we have seen, we have gone far in terms of understanding our manufacturing processes. And we have a good amount of interest coming in from an investment perspective, and we're taking in more as well. So definitely anybody who wants to have those kind of discussions with us should feel free. We're also in a good place when it comes to commitments for the vehicle. So we're trying to move surely. I can't really say much more than that, but we're on our way.
Okay. All right. But you can tell me what we can expect from Chemet in coming years.
Oh yeah. I think inshallah, touch wood by God's grace. In the next 12 to 24 months, you should start to see some Chemet vehicles.
All right. Yeah. I'm available for test drive.
Of course. Let me write it down. Let's get Bulu on the test ride.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So I think it's been a very, very, very interesting conversation. Is there anything any question you feel like I should have asked?
No, I have a question for you, though. I want to know, what are your thoughts on EVs? Are you somebody who feels as though you will be a first mover? Or are you more somebody who wants to see how it plays out? What's your perspective?
Definitely a first mover.
Hey, okay.
I think EVs, they're interesting. And the rate, I think... The rate at which the innovation is happening right now, I think because of the competition, right? China versus America, the innovation is really fast. I think I read this week that BYD was able to build a charger that give you about almost 290 something miles in like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is absolutely insane. So I'm definitely a first mover. I'm very excited for it. I also, like when I see conversations about EVs on Twitter anyway, I'm just there to like tell people, okay, when they have all these misconceptions and they're like, oh, there's no mechanic for EV, and they're like, don't worry, you don't really need that much. You will really need to change anything. There's no oiling you are doing. There's no... Right, so first mover, definitely.
Okay, and second one is, what are the factors that you consider when getting an EV in terms of order of importance to you?
It's definitely can be a micro EV.
Okay.
I have this fear of, I've seen bike accidents, right? They are terrible, absolutely terrible. So it has to be... It can be a micro. It has to be like a normal regular car. I think that's the most important. I don't really care much about whether it has Apple CarPlay or a 7-inch screen or just that it's a car. It works, right? It's comfortable. Mm-hmm. Those are the most important. Then we can now start going into the nitty gritty details like whether leather seats or and infotainment systems and things like that. Yeah.
So functionality is more important to you, if I'm getting it right, than aesthetics and technology. Mm,
and I'm seeing that from I'm seeing that from, I think my own would probably be I'm probably the only kind of, well, some of the only kind of person that care about that, because I'm speaking from the point of, you know, buying an EV from like an African manufacturer.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking more from the aspect of just supporting, mm-hmm. right, than really caring about what someone that wants to buy a car needs. Right. If I was buying a Toyota or something, I would be more very specific.
Yes. Okay.
But if I was buying from a, you know, Nigerian manufacturer and an EV, I don't really care. Just make something that works. Let's all use it. Let's help the market grow. Let's help you develop.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. We need more patriots like you. 100%. And what would be your point of frustration? What is the one thing that you feel would be too frustrating for you to proceed with an EV if it occurs?
Okay, that would be if you tell me I have a 300-mile range and my battery dies after 150 miles, that would be a very...
Got you. misleading information in range.
Yeah. Okay. If my car dies on Third Mainland Bridge and
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for this. We'll factor this into our own.
All right. So I guess we how do I say it now? We had our beds and our stones, and I think we killed them. Yes, so I got an interview. You did a bit of market research. So All right. Awesome. Thank you so much for this.
No, thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm really happy to see people like you who like EVs.
Yeah. I like tech in general, but EVs, they have a special place in my heart. I can't wait for, you know.
And I can't wait to be able to give you guys cars that you can love. So
Yes.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Definitely fingers crossed.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of your stay in Lagos. I don't know. Are you staying for long?
A little over a week. But yes, I will. I shall enjoy all the food before I leave.
All right.
All right, man. Have a good day.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.